All right, so this is Thy Kingdom Come, and a subtitle again of The Law of the Tithe, and this is part three of this, Law of the Tithe. And I want to go back to our theme verse. Proverbs 3, verse 9 says, Honor Yahweh from your wealth and from the first of all your produce, so your barns will be filled with plenty and your vats will overflow with new wine. So again, the command and the promise. I also want to go back to Malachi 3 again. Malachi chapter 3. Malachi 3 and starting in verse 6 it says, For I, Yahweh, do not change. Therefore you, O sons of Jacob, are not consumed. From the days of your fathers you have turned aside from my statutes and have not kept them. Return to me and I will return to you, says Yahweh of hosts. But you say, How shall we return? Verse 8 says, Will a man rob God? Yet you are robbing me. So again, the question is asked, How do we return? He says, Return to me. And we say, How? How do we return? And he goes right to, You're robbing me. But you say, How have we robbed thee? Well, the answer is given in tithes and offerings. You are cursed with a curse, for you are robbing me, the whole nation of you. Bring, and again, I'll point this out to you, as before, bring the whole tithe, not some of it, not a portion of it, but the whole tithe into the storehouse, so that there may be food in my house. And test me now in this, says Yahweh of hosts, if I will not open for you the windows of heaven and pour out for you a blessing until it overflows. Then, that is, after you're bringing the whole tithe into the storehouse, then I will rebuke the devourer for you, so that it may not destroy the fruits of the ground. Nor will your vine in the field cast its grapes, says Yahweh of hosts. And all the nations will call you blessed, for you shall be a delightful land, says Yahweh of hosts. So again, there's a lot in that passage, a lot there that we've already talked about. Romans 2, let's look at Romans 2 real quick. In the New Testament, the Apostle Paul says something here that's interesting. The New American Standard reads this way in Romans 2, verse 22. It says, You who say that one should not commit adultery, do you commit adultery? You who abhor idols, do you rob temples? And the King James Version says at that last portion of the last sentence, it says, Do you commit sacrilege? Is that what KJV says? Yeah, it says, Do you commit sacrilege? Why the New American Standard translators put this or rendered this, Do you rob temples? I have no idea. But sacrilege is robbing the Almighty. That's what sacrilege is to rob our Lord. So Paul is asking the question, Do you rob Yahweh? That's a good way to say it. Do you rob Yahweh? Well, how would you rob him? In tithes and offerings. So why they said rob temples, I guess that's how they, in their minds, were thinking you would rob Yahweh. But you rob Yahweh in his tithes and offerings. So while we're thinking in this vein, let's go to Hosea chapter 4, a very familiar passage that never hurts to be reminded of. Hosea, Joel, Amos, Obadiah. Hosea chapter 4. Hosea chapter 4 and verse 6 says, My people are destroyed for lack of knowledge. Because you have rejected knowledge, I also will reject you from being my priest. Since you have forgotten the law of your God, I also will forget your children. And the law of the tithe, again, is one portion of the law. It's part of the law. It's not separated out from the law. It's part of the law. And one of the ways we forget him, when we forget his law, is by forgetting the tithe and the offering. And we see this effect, then, the sin or the judgment passed down through the generations. I will forget your children. Go to 2 Kings with me. 2 Kings chapter 17. 2 Kings 17. We'll start in verse 13. Yet Yahweh warned Israel and Judah, through all his prophets and every seer, saying, turn from your evil ways and keep my commandments, my statutes, according to all the law which I commanded your fathers and which I sent to you through my servants, the prophets. However, they did not listen, but stiffened their neck like their fathers, who did not believe. And that's what you've got to catch. They did not believe in Yahweh, their God. And they rejected His statutes and His covenant. That's how you don't believe in Him. You don't keep His law. Many times you hear people say, well, I believe in God, or I believe in Jesus, or whatever. Well, you don't believe in Him if you don't obey Him. That's very clear. So it says they did not believe in Him, and they rejected His statutes and His covenant which He made with their fathers, and His warnings with which He warned them, and they followed vanity and became vain, and went after the nations which surrounded them, concerning which Yahweh had commanded them not to do like them. Are we doing like the nations today all around us? Absolutely. So we choose. We choose Yahweh's law, which includes His tithe, or we become subject to the tyrant, his law, and his tithe, or his tribute, or his tax. And this is very clear again, and if you go back to 1 Samuel with me, 1 Samuel chapter 8, another very familiar passage, I'm sure. And we are, hopefully here in just a few minutes, we're going to get into the law of the tithe itself. Finally, after all this long introduction, we're going to get to the tithe, how the tithe works, what the different tithes are. But again, the situation we wind up in when we choose not to pay Yahweh His tithe and we choose not to obey His law, here's where we wind up, just like our forefathers of old. 1 Samuel chapter 8, starting in verse 6, it says, but the thing was displeasing in the sight of Samuel, when they said, give us a king to judge us. And Samuel prayed to Yahweh. And Yahweh said to Samuel, listen to the voice of the people in regard to all that they say to you, for they have not rejected you, but they have rejected me from being king over them. And that's what we do when we set up something different, a different program, a constitutional republic, or whatever it is. We have rejected Him as king.
And it goes along with Ted's tapes.
Exactly. Exactly. And it's that series, if you haven't started on it yet, it's a good series to get started on, because it's no doubt that that Constitutional Convention was a departure from where we had been. Drop down to verse 10. So Samuel spoke all the words of Yahweh to the people who had asked of him a king. And he said, this will be the procedure of the king, or you could just say this, of the ruler, of the tyrant, of the despot, of the government, who will reign over you. He will take your sons and place them for himself in his chariots and among his horsemen, and they will run before his chariots. And you can visualize this today. They'll march before his chariots, Afghanistan, Iraq. There will be no end to it. They'll do his bidding, your sons and daughters. And he will appoint for himself commanders of thousands and of fifties, and some to do his plowing and to reap his harvest and to make his weapons of war and equipment for his chariots. He will also take your daughters for perfumers and cooks and bakers, and he will take the best of your fields and your vineyards and your olive groves and give them to his servants. In other words, give them to people that he would prefer to have them instead of you. He will also take your male servants and your female servants and your best young men and your donkeys and use them for his work. He will take a tenth of your flocks, and you yourselves will become his servants. Then you will cry out in that day because of your king or your governor or your president whom you have chosen for yourselves. But Yahweh will not answer you in that day. In other words, it'll be oppressive. He'll rob you. He'll take from you. You'll wind up with nothing. You'll just be a servant for him. I just was learning recently, well, a couple, 3 days ago, of a little town in New York State. I forget the name of the town. But they're so generous and so benevolent toward their subjects there that they've initiated a new program where they're going to allow these elderly people, retired people on fixed incomes, to work for the town to earn credit toward their property tax. We were just talking about property tax. To earn credit toward their property tax. They can work for this town at a rate of $7 per hour, doing the work the town wants done, and can earn up to $1,000 of credit toward their property tax bill. Well, you think $1,000 toward their property tax bill? Yeah. This one lady that they were writing about, her tax bill was $17,000. $17,000. So more and more of these elderly people on fixed incomes, as the property taxes go through the roof, they cannot pay it. And this woman was glad to be able to earn that thousand. Oh, it was a wonderful thing. See how benevolent and kind they are to their subjects. And as soon as she can't, and here she is, an old widow, as soon as she can't come up with that property tax bill, she's out of there. And this will be the order of the king that will rule over you right here. And she's seeing it firsthand, and she didn't even know it was a bad thing. She thought it was wonderful that they would let her work this out like this, at least get some tax credit at $7 an hour after a lifetime of work. And who knows, she could have been a dentist, a doctor, a lawyer. You know, she could have been highly educated, highly skilled. But they say, if you want to work some of this tax off, here it is, $7 an hour, take it or leave it. $1,000 max. So that's the order of the king that we have ruling over us. In the home of the brave and the land of the free. Look at, let's read on. I stopped there at verse 18 says, "Then you will cry out in that day because of your king whom you have chosen for yourselves, but Yahweh will not answer you in that day. Nevertheless, the people refused to listen to the voice of Samuel, and they said, 'No, but there shall be a king over us. We will do it our way.'" That's what they were saying. "We're going to do it our way. But we also, or that we also may be like all the nations." Well, wouldn't that be a good thing, to be like all the other nations? Oh boy. "That our king may judge us and go out before us and fight our battles." Now after Samuel had heard all the words of the people, he repeated them in Yahweh's hearing. And Yahweh said to Samuel, "Listen to their voice and appoint them a king." So Samuel said to the men of Israel, "Go every man to his city." Isn't that a sad picture? And yet, that's where we are today. We're robbed and oppressed continually, taxed and taxed and taxed again on the same dollars. No system of just weights and measures. No way to escape the bondage. No way to even own property for ourselves. And yet, we go around saying how wonderful it is to be free. We say it's a wonderful thing. If we had any idea in Yahweh's kingdom, under His kingdom order, the freedom we would enjoy. Go over to chapter 10, 1 Samuel chapter 10. Freedom, prosperity, and blessings is what we would have, but we choose another way every time, it seems. Chapter 10 and verse 17 says, "Therefore Samuel called the people together to Yahweh at Mizpah, and he said to the sons of Israel, 'Thus says Yahweh, the God of Israel, I brought Israel up from Egypt, and I delivered you from the hand of the Egyptians and from the power of all the kingdoms that were oppressing you. But you today rejected your God who delivers you from all your calamities and your distresses. Yet you have said, "No, but set a king over us." Now therefore present yourselves before Yahweh by your tribes and by your clans." So again, when we choose another way, we choose to do it our way, and it can be anything. We could call it a socialism. We could call it democracy. We can call it a constitutional republic. We can call it whatever we want. But when we choose to do it our way, we have rejected Him from being king over us. So like our ancestors in Samuel's day, we have chosen another way. We had a better idea. And at that Constitutional Convention, again, was a major, major turning point. We said we want to be like the other nations. So, I want to get into how Yahweh's tithe works. I said to you, way back at the beginning of this, that most people today, even people who say, yes, the tithe is still applicable, is something we still should do. They think the tithe is a simple 10% you give to your local church. That's, by and large, what you'll hear. Well, it's the first 10% of your income given to your local church, mainly. Well, and that's basically what you'll hear. That's the heart of what I understood way back when. But truly, the tithe is more than 10%, and we're going to see that. And the tithe is not something to run a religious organization. The tithe is what is meant to fund the kingdom government. The kingdom government is run by these funds. You know, any government, any administration has to be funded. There has to be resources. And the tithe is the system by which all the government is run and all things the government is supposed to do are accomplished. In fact, once I get through this section on the tithes, as we break the tithes down, tithes plural, then I'm going to get into the work of the Levites, because the Levites are the ones who do the work of the government. They're administrators. They're not just the guys who offer the goats at the temple or at the tabernacle. They're administrators of kingdom government. And they would be the equivalent of what we might call civil servants. So they, in other words, they make the government work, and they're funded, they're supported by the tithe system. But that's not all that the tithe system does, not at all. So, the 10% tithe, though, I'll call it that because this is the one that people generally think of when they think of the tithe and they think of the 10%. This is it. We'll start in Leviticus 27. Does anybody know or remember where that 10% tithe goes to before we read here? Leviticus 27. What's your best recollection of who gets this 10% tithe? You know, all the people, they bring the first 10% of their increase and who gets, what'd you say?
Priest.
The priest. We bring it to the Levites, right? Okay. So Leviticus 27, verse 30 says, "Thus all the tithe of the land, of the seed of the land, or of the fruit of the tree, is Yahweh's." It's holy to Yahweh. It's His. It's not ours. It's His. Remember how we've talked about that taxation is a claim to ownership? No entity can demand something from you if they don't believe it's theirs. You know, again, I gave the example, I could go around to a group of men at a job site, I could say, okay, I want you guys all to start sending me 2% of your paycheck every week now. And they're going to laugh. Because they're going to say, who are you? You have no right, you have no authority, you have no claim to that 2%. We're not sending you anything. That would be silly. It's a claim of ownership. When, again, the lady trying to pay her property tax that I was just talking about, a $17,000 tax bill, if the government takes her property from her, are they not saying it's our property? When they say to you, we want this 4 months of your life every year, what you can produce in that 4 months, you're going to send it to us, are they not saying we own you? They are saying we own you and we own what you produce. And we'll tell you how much of it you can keep. So, tax is a claim to ownership. But Yahweh is the only one who has authority to say it's His. Because as we've already established in prior lessons, we said, or we saw in the scripture, that He says it's all His. It's all His. So this tithe is His. Verse 31, if therefore a man wishes to redeem part of his tithe, he shall add to it one-fifth of it. And for every tenth part of the herd or the flock, whatever passes under the rod, the tenth shall be holy to Yahweh. Now, Well, let me read verse 33 because it explains some of this. He is not to be concerned whether it's good or bad, nor shall he examine it, or if he does exchange it, then both it and its substitute shall become holy. It shall not be redeemed. These are the commandments which Yahweh commanded Moses for the sons of Israel at Mount Sinai. So there's the tithes at the end. Now, when it says in verse 32, for every tenth part, whatever passes under the rod, that's holy. In other words, you're not to look it over and say, well, I'm just going to give the bad ones. You know, I'm going to keep the good ones over here. I'm going to, no, you take that 10% and that's his. And if a one that wasn't quite so good got through, along beside one that was excellent, they all went through. You weren't to go through and pick out just the bad ones. On the other hand, you didn't have to go through and pick out the best either. It wasn't like you had to pick out the spotless and perfect ones like for a perfect sacrifice. I mean, they just all went, these are the first of your increase, there they are. A representation of what you had, in other words, of your increase. Now, when it says, if therefore a man wishes to redeem, verse 31, if therefore a man wishes to redeem part of his tithe, he shall add to it one-fifth of it. Y'all know what that's talking about? The best that I can tell at this point is this. For instance, let's say that for some reason, it's talking about part of it, the part of the tithe, that is, part of your one-tenth. If you want to redeem part of that tithe, say for instance you had a crop of cantaloupe, and for some reason you want to redeem part of that, you can buy that portion back. But here's what you do. You pay for that with money, and you add one-fifth. So remember how I said it's not just one-tenth, it's not that simple? Okay, well here's the first example of that.
20%.
There you go. Say it was $1,000. Say it was $1,000 worth of cantaloupe. I'm going to put it in terms we can relate to. $1,000 worth of cantaloupe you want to redeem back. Well, you have to add one-fifth to that, which would equal 20%. Say if it's $1,000, it would be $200, right? That's added to your tithe. So now you've gone over and above the 10%, right? So you're already over the 10% if you do that. Well, let's say, for instance, that you didn't raise a crop this year, but you had an increase. Well, how could you do that? Well, very easily. Let's say, for instance, that you're not raising crop now. You went into manufacturing camel saddles. You know, took a bunch of the leather from your last year's flock that you slaughtered them, whatever, you saved the hides and you made a bunch of camel saddles, and you had so much in raw materials and you sold it for this much, you had a great big increase, but it was in money, which would be gold and silver, by the way. It would be a just standard, just measure, so it would be gold, silver, something like that. We'll say it's gold and silver, something with real value, just weights, and you had an increase. Well, and you're going to give your tithe in that. It appears to me, now I could be wrong, but it appears to me you've got to add a fifth to it.
What are you redeeming?
Well, you're right. Maybe you're not redeeming it in that case.
But it is redeeming.
Well, if you're just giving it in money, if you're just giving it in money, you're not the way I'm looking at it is you're not bringing anything into the storehouse. You're not bringing an increase of the land or of a flock or so forth. That's something I might need to study more on. But the bottom line is there's a difference if you're giving money for part of your tithe.
Because you wouldn't want to redeem it just to pay 20% more. But
you wouldn't redeem it.
It wouldn't make any sense.
Well, you wouldn't be redeeming it, but you're not bringing into the storehouse an increase in flock or fruit or produce. So I'll have to think about that or look at it some more, maybe read some more on it. But let's say again, go back to what is here, what we can see here clearly. If you're bringing in your first the first fruits of your increase, and you want to redeem part of that back, you have to add too. So somehow the Levites took in money. They took in money. Everything they brought in wasn't food and flocks and so and animals, so to speak. So, and some people were involved in merchandise and merchandising and manufacturing. Not everyone was making their increase from the field, produce of the field. But there's your first example that you can go over the 10%. That's the first example of it, and we're going to see more. Let's go to Numbers chapter 18. Numbers chapter 18. And verse 20 says, Then Yahweh said to Aaron, You shall have no inheritance in their land, nor own any portion among them. I am your portion and your inheritance among the sons of Israel. And to the sons of Levi, behold, I have given all the tithe in Israel for an inheritance in return for their service which they perform, the service of the tent of the meeting. So again, the Levites don't have a portion in the land. Let me comment on this real quick, like, and I won't go look at it, but I have seen, I'd have to find it at this moment, but I have seen that the Levites can own property and houses. And they do. But what they do not own is that perpetual inheritance, that portion which is always passed down generation to generation, that cannot be sold, bought or sold, that cannot, even if it's sold for a time, goes back, reverts back to the owners at the Jubilee. The Levites can own a house in a city. Houses in a city are different from the land which is productive. That's the portion, that's the inheritance that's being referred to here. For instance, when a Levite moved from town to town, it talks specifically about that. Say this Levite moves to another town, he can sell this lot with a house on it. He can sell it and he can buy another lot in this town over here with a house on it. He can buy a house. The Levites were not homeless and they were not paupers. The Levites were actually very important in kingdom society. They were the civil government. They were the judges. They were, you know, they were not intended to be poor or destitute at all in any way. And they did own homes. And think about it now. They were getting 10% of all the increase of all the nation. If the nation was wealthy, so were they. Very wealthy.
So they kind of got paid.
Oh, absolutely. They were supported in what they did. And they bought homes. And all, you know what I need to do? I need to find that for you. But I have read it. I know for sure. Mm-hmm. It talks about Levites buying, if they come into your town, buy a home, you know. So they were not destitute. They weren't paupers. They didn't just have to live in the temple because they had nowhere else to lay their head. I mean, they were important members of society, contributing members. They worked hard, and they had homes and families, and so we need to see them in their proper light. The inheritance or portion they didn't have was that productive farmland that was handed down generation to generation. Those people, that land was protected because that was their livelihood. The Levites' livelihood was in serving the nation. They were servants of the nation. Okay, verse 21. And to the sons of Levi, behold, I have given all the tithe in Israel. That's their inheritance. Verse 22, And the sons of Israel shall not come near the tent of meeting again, lest they bear sin and die. Only the Levites shall perform the service of the tent of meeting, and they shall bear their iniquity. It shall be a perpetual statute throughout your generations, and among the sons of Israel they shall have no inheritance. For the tithe of the sons of Israel, which they offer as an offering to Yahweh, I have given to the Levites for an inheritance. They shall have no inheritance among the sons of Israel. Then Yahweh spoke to Moses, saying, Moreover, you shall speak to the Levites and say to them, When you take from the sons of Israel the tithe which I have given you from them for your inheritance, then you shall present an offering from it to Yahweh, a tithe of the tithe. So you see that even the Levites tithed on their tithe, called in some places a votive offering. And your offering shall be reckoned to you as the grain from the threshing floor or the full produce from the wine vat. So you shall also present an offering to Yahweh from your tithes, which you receive from the sons of Israel, and from it you shall give Yahweh's offering to Aaron the priest. So they tithed to the high priest. Okay, let's see, I think I want to keep reading here. Let me keep reading. Verse 29, out of all your gifts you shall present every offering due Yahweh, from all the best of them, the sacred part from them. And you shall say to them, when you have offered it from the best of it, then the rest shall be reckoned to the Levites as the product of the threshing floor and as the product of the wine vat. And you may eat it anywhere, you and your households, for it is your compensation in return for your service in the tent of meeting. And that's not the only service they did, by the way. And you shall bear no sin by reason of it when you have offered the best of it, but you shall not profane the sacred gifts of the sons of Israel, lest you die. Now, there was some accountability for what they received from Israel, which is right. Deuteronomy chapter 14. So again, we're looking at the tithe now, which is the one that almost everybody knows about, or at least thinks about when they think of the tithe. They're thinking of that 10% which goes to the priest, or to the Levites, I should say, to the Levites. Not all Levites were priests, but this tithe came to the Levites. It was from the Levites that the priests were taken, but not all Levites were priests. So, I mean, they had wives, they had families, and we'll see as we get into the service of the Levites, we'll see that they did much more than just, they were much more than priests. It was from the Levites that came, for instance, the musicians and the singers and the judges. So they weren't just priests, but they were the civil service corps. So in Deuteronomy chapter 14, let's start in verse 22. You shall surely tithe all the produce from what you sow, which comes out of the field every year. And you shall eat in the presence of Yahweh your God at the place where He chooses to establish His name, the tithe of your grain, your new wine, your oil, the firstborn of your herd and your flock, in order that you may learn to fear Yahweh your God always. Sounds like this tithe, this giving of tribute, has something to do with fearing Yahweh. In other words, if you don't do that, it's indicative that we have no fear of Yahweh before our eyes. You know? So verse 24, and if the distance is so great for you that you're not able to bring the tithe, since the place where Yahweh your God chooses to set His name is too far away from you when Yahweh your God blesses you. Now look at this. Then you shall exchange it for money, and bind the money in your hand, and go to the place which Yahweh your God chooses. Now, this is actually, I'm kind of ahead of myself already. I really need to move this. Basically what this is saying is, now this is when you're going to the feast. You're going to the feast, and you're bringing the tithe, and you can't march a big flock, and you don't have enough wagons to load up all this stuff. You don't want to have to march this caravan off to where Yahweh has designated. So you sell it. You turn it into money. And you bring this money with you. And you may spend the money for whatever your heart desires, verse 26, for oxen or sheep, wine, strong drink, or whatever your heart desires. And there you shall eat in the presence of Yahweh your God and rejoice, you and your household. And I really need to move this passage to the next section. because this is about the rejoicing tithe here, or the festival tithe. But let's go to chapter 26, Deuteronomy 26. Make myself a note here. Okay, chapter 26, verse 1 says, "Then it shall be, when you enter the land which Yahweh your God gives you as an inheritance, and you possess it and live in it, that you shall take some of the first of all the produce of the ground, which you shall bring in from the land that Yahweh your God gives you, and you'll put it in a basket, and go to the place where Yahweh has chosen to establish His name. And you shall go to the priest who is in office at that time, and say to him, 'I declare this day, to Yahweh my God that I have entered the land which Yahweh swore to our fathers to give us.' Then the priest shall take the basket from your hand and set it down before the altar of Yahweh your God. And you shall answer and say before Yahweh your God, 'My father was a wandering Aramean, and he went down to Egypt and sojourned there, few in number.'" In other words, he's recalling all these things that our forefathers had gone through. "Then we cried out to Yahweh," verse 7. "And Yahweh heard our voice, and He sent us a deliverer," basically, I'm going to paraphrase, "and then led us out of there." So, again, this is a remembrance. It's a recognition. The tithe is another way that we remember what Yahweh has done for us. So, the 10% tithe, what I'm calling a 10% tithe, again, is what went to the Levites, what went to the priest, the people who did the service to the nation. It wasn't necessarily just 10% either. In some cases, it was more, right? We've seen that one. But then also, there are two more specific tithes. And let's go to chapter 12 of Deuteronomy. And if you remember at the very beginning of this series, I said there are at least three different tithes. There was also the feast tithe, or the festival, or the rejoicing tithe. And there was the poor tithe. And we're going to look at that as well. So there are at least these three different kinds of tithe. Here in Deuteronomy 12, let's say, start in verse 5. "But ye shall seek Yahweh." Again, here's this same terminology. "At the place which Yahweh your God shall choose from all your tribes to establish His name, there for His dwelling, and there you shall come." So, He's the one who decides where we're going, right, for festivals to bring our tithes to and so forth. He's the one, He establishes the place where He's going to have His name dwell. And then all the men are required to get there three times a year. Verse 6, "And there you shall bring your burnt offerings, your sacrifices, your tithes, the contribution of your hand, your votive offerings," which is the offerings of the priests, "and your free will offerings, and the firstborn of your herd and your flock. There also you and your households shall eat before Yahweh your God and rejoice in all your undertakings in which Yahweh your God has blessed you. You shall not do at all what we are doing here today," that is, every man doing what's right in his own eyes, "for you have not as yet come to the resting place and the inheritance which Yahweh your God is giving you." Let's see. I guess I'll keep reading. "When you cross the Jordan and live in the land which Yahweh your God is giving you to inherit, and He gives you rest from all your enemies around you so that you live in security, then it shall come about that the place which Yahweh your God shall choose for His name to dwell, there you shall bring all that I command you, your burnt offerings, your sacrifices, your tithes, and the contribution of your hand, and all your choice votive offerings which you will vow to Yahweh. And you shall," I want you to see this, "and you shall rejoice." You shall rejoice before Yahweh your God, you and your sons and daughters, your male and female servants, and the Levite who is within your gates, since he has no portion or inheritance with you. Be careful that you do not offer your burnt offerings in every place you see. New American Standard has in there, "in every cultic place you see," but "in the place which Yahweh chooses in one of your tribes, There you shall offer your burnt offerings, and there you shall do all that I command you. However, you may slaughter and eat meat within any of your gates, whatever you desire, according to the blessing of Yahweh your God, which he has given you. The unclean and the clean may eat of it. As of the gazelle and of the deer. Only you shall not eat the blood. You are to pour it on the ground like water. You are not allowed to eat within your gates the tithe of your grain, or new wine, or oil, or the firstborn of your flock, or any of your votive offerings which you vow, or your free will offering, or the contribution of your hand. But you shall eat them before Yahweh your God in the place which Yahweh your God will choose. You and your son, your daughter, your male, your female servants, the Levite who is within your gates, and you shall rejoice before Yahweh your God in all your undertakings. He wants us to rejoice. He wants us to do it joyfully and with joy. In fact, in Deuteronomy 28, verse 45 through 47 says this, "So all these curses shall come on you and pursue you and overtake you until you are destroyed, because you would not obey Yahweh your God by keeping his commandments and his statutes which he commanded you. And they shall become a sign and a wonder on you and your descendants forever, because you did not serve Yahweh your God with joy and a glad heart for the abundance of all things." Why? Because you didn't serve with joy and a glad heart. He wants us to do these things with a joyful and a glad heart. It shouldn't be a burdensome thing. It shouldn't be that we say, oh, I've got to go give this tithe. Oh, my goodness, that's an awful lot. No, we should do it with joy. We should do it with gladness of heart, being thankful for what we've been given. And that's the heart that He wants us to have. So it's a rejoicing tithe. Chapter 16 of Deuteronomy. Chapter 16, verse 9 says, "You shall count 7 weeks for yourself. You shall begin to count 7 weeks from the time you begin to put the sickle to the standing grain. Then you shall celebrate the Feast of Weeks to Yahweh your God with a tribute of a free will offering of your hand, which you shall give, just as Yahweh your God blesses you." Verse 13 says, "You shall celebrate the Feast of Booths 7 days after you have gathered in from your threshing floor and your wine vat. And you shall rejoice in your feast, you and your son, your daughter, your male, your female servants, and the Levite, and the stranger, the orphan, and the widow who are in your towns. 7 days you shall celebrate a feast to Yahweh your God in the place which Yahweh chooses. Because Yahweh your God will bless you in all your produce and all the work of your hands, so that you shall be altogether joyful. 3 times a year all your males shall appear before Yahweh your God in the place which He chooses, at the Feast of Unleavened Bread, at the Feast of Weeks, at the Feast of Booths. And they shall not appear before Yahweh empty-handed. Every man shall give as he is able, according to the blessing of Yahweh your God, which He has given you." Now verse 18 goes into appointing judges and officers, which I'm going to get into when I get into the service of the Levites. But again, the festival tithe is separate and distinct from the 10% given to the Levitical servants, given to the Levites. The festival tithe is something different, and it's used in a different way, but it's over and above the 10%. So we saw in the original 10%, that if a man redeemed a portion of his tithe, that he had to add to it a fifth. So he was over a tenth then. Now we see that we've got another tithe, the festival tithe, the rejoicing tithe, which a man was able to use for different purposes and to give in different ways as he saw fit, is over and above the 10%. Nevertheless, it's a tithe that it's part of the law of the tithe. So we're already at over 10%, aren't we? We're already at over 10%. And then we have what's normally called the poor tithe. And we're into part of Yahweh's welfare system. In Yahweh's welfare system, people are helped as they're needed. And they're helped to get back on their feet. They're helped to become productive. They're helped along, but they're not put in a place of dependency, perpetual dependency. That's not Yahweh's system. In Psalm 68, we'll start in Psalm 68. Psalm 68 and verse 5 says, well, let's start in verse 4. Sing to God, sing praises to His name. Lift up a song for Him who rides through the deserts, whose name is Yahweh, and exult before Him, a father of the fatherless and a judge for the widows. Is God in His holy habitation. He's one who cares about the fatherless, the orphans. He cares about the widow. And He provided for them in His law. He provides for them specifically and says, don't ignore them. Exodus chapter 22. Exodus chapter 22. Exodus chapter 22. We're going to start in verse 22. You shall not afflict any widow or orphan. If you afflict him at all, and if he does cry out to me, I will surely hear his cry, and my anger will be kindled, and I will kill you with the sword, and your wives shall become widows, and your children fatherless. He sounds pretty serious about us not ignoring orphans. It's in his system. It's in his system of tithes that we provide for and take care of them. Deuteronomy chapter 14. And again, I want to say and stress that he does not cater to deadbeats. He does not provide for somebody who's just too dadgum sorry to go to work. That's not what his welfare system is about. But men go off to war and don't come back. Now you got a widow and possibly orphans. And he cares about them. And other things happen. A man gets hurt or gets sick or various things happen that are out of our control. And we have truly needy people among us. And these are the truly needy are the ones that he cares about. Deuteronomy 14 verse 27. Also you shall not neglect the Levite who is in your town, for he has no portion or inheritance among you. At the end of every third year, you shall bring out all the tithe of your produce in that year and shall deposit it in your town. And the Levite, because he has no portion or inheritance among you, and the alien, the orphan, and the widow who are in your town shall come and eat and be satisfied in order that Yahweh your God may bless you. In other words, again, here, in order that Yahweh your God may bless you in all the work of your hand, which you do. In other words, if you don't do this, he can't bless you. We've got to do this. So every third year, we offer up the poor tithe. Chapter 26. Chapter 26 and verse 12 says, when you have finished paying all the tithe of the increase in the third year, the year of tithing, then you shall give it to the Levite, to the stranger, to the orphan, and to the widow, that they may eat in your towns and be satisfied. And you shall say before Yahweh your God, I have removed the sacred portion from my house, and also have given it to the Levite and the alien, the orphan, the widow, according to all thy commandments which thou hast commanded me. I have not transgressed or forgotten any of thy commandments. So again, remember in Malachi it says, make sure you bring, you've robbed me by not giving me the tithes and offerings. And he says, bring all the tithe, not some of it. What about the widows and the orphans? You know, not just one of the tithes, all the tithes. He wants to make sure we're giving all of it. Let's go to Leviticus chapter 19. I've got a place I wanted to get to today, and I'm hurrying up to try to get there. Leviticus chapter 19, verse 9 says, now when you reap the harvest of your land, you shall not reap to the very corners of your field, neither shall you gather the gleanings of your harvest, nor shall you glean from your vineyard, nor shall you gather the fallen fruit of the vineyard. You shall leave them for the needy and for the stranger. I am Yahweh, your God. Well, you say, well, that's not a tithe. Well, It is a part of his system for providing. He said, so that there will be food in my storehouse, so that there will be plenty for my people. And this is one way that it is provided to his people. The needy, the poor, could glean the corners of the fields where you've left. Yes.
So you should just leave that corner, even though nobody's going to come pick it?
Well, if nobody's going to come pick it, I would say no. And again, a lot of these things don't apply necessarily to us today because, for one thing, I don't produce a harvest. And for another thing...
I do, but not for a profit.
Right, right. And also, we're not living in this system.
I mean, what? I'm a widow, but I certainly don't sit back and wait for somebody to bring me something.
Right. Well, we are so far removed from this. But what we're looking at, we're not even an agrarian people by and large today.
Right.
We're just not. Most people don't have a goat, much less a herd. So we're so far removed from this, but the reason we're looking at this, if you search for the heart of Yahweh in it, the bottom line is He has a way to provide for us. When we return to the kingdom system of government, which we will do, somebody needs to know how to do it. And we will be agrarian again because there won't be unjust weights and measures and all the stuff that we see going on today. I'm sure there will be industry and manufacturing and so forth, but there also will be great agricultural pursuits going on. Many more of us will be there. The heart of Yahweh is don't neglect the poor and the needy. Not the deadbeats, the worthless man. No. The poor and the needy. The ones that need to be helped and deserve a leg up. The fact that the poor tithe was only offered every third year. Why would that be? Why would you only do it every third year? Well, for one thing, you don't want these people to become absolutely dependent. What you're trying to do is capitalize them at this time. Let's say, for instance, something has happened and somebody, a widow, has been left with two children. She can become capitalized at this point in time and somehow get a leg up and get a start, a new start, a fresh start, not a check every 2 weeks. Or somebody coming by every 2 weeks to support her and her children indefinitely. That's not the way it works. She becomes capitalized. She gets some help so that she can get on her own two feet and support herself. So that she's not out gleaning fields for the next 25 years. That's not the idea. See, Yahweh's welfare system does not work that way. For instance, again, in Yahweh's system, were there slaves? Yes, there were slaves. And we've looked at this before. There were several ways you could become a slave in Yahweh's kingdom government system. One of the ways was you could be in debt. You could fall on hard times, have a bad crop, could be your own fault, might not, I don't know, but you could wind up selling yourself into slavery because you owe this man a debt and you can't pay it. So you have to work it out. But what happens? You're one of the Israel people. What happens? You can only do that for 6 years, right? Because on the seventh year, you're set free. So there's a way for you to pay debt when you're broke, you've hit bottom, but there's also a way for you to be redeemed from that debt. There's a way for you to get free and get a new start. So in Yahweh's system, it's all about recovery. It's all about getting help and then recovering and going on and becoming productive and becoming responsible. There's not an endless irresponsible taking. That is not in Yahweh's system. That's like the jail system. Now, in Yahweh's system, justice is done and restitution is made. If it's a capital crime, of course, the capital crime is dealt with through capital punishment. And justice is done. Everybody moves on. In Yahweh's system, there's always a healing and a new start. In our system today, that is not the case. We've got perpetual deadbeats. And we become servants to the poor because we have to continually work, and hand it over. They don't give any accounting for what they're doing. In fact, let me move on to the next thing here because, let me hit Leviticus 23 real quick and then we'll move on because I want you to see that in Yahweh's welfare system, it is part of the tithing system. But I want you to see that the way that things were done, again, there was not an irresponsible taking indefinitely. In chapter 23, verse 22, it says, when you reap the harvest of your land, moreover, you shall not reap to the very corners of your field, nor gather to the gleaning of your harvest. You are to leave them for the needy and the alien. I am Yahweh, your God. So there again is the same thing. Now this again is not part of your 10%. But you're giving still. So again, it's not just 10%. Here's more again. Let's go to Deuteronomy chapter 24. It's not just a simple 10%, is it? It's not that simple. It is the funding of the kingdom, the funding of the administration of our Lord's kingdom government is done through all these various tithes and ways. Chapter 24, Deuteronomy 24, let's start at verse 19. It says, when you reap your harvest in your field and have forgotten a sheaf in the field, you shall not go back to get it. It shall be for the alien, for the orphan, and for the widow, in order that Yahweh your God may bless you in all the work of your hands. When you beat your olive tree, you shall not go over the boughs again. It shall be for the alien, for the orphan, and for the widow. When you gather the grapes of your vineyard, you shall not go over it again. It shall be for the alien, for the orphan, and for the widow. And you shall remember that you were a slave in the land of Egypt. Therefore, I am commanding you to do this thing. Real quick, in Ruth, the book of Ruth, let me read from these. I'm afraid I'm running out of time here. Let me read from you out of the Digest of the Divine Law by Howard Rand. Real quickly, page 93, says this, the Israel system of taxation based upon the tithe complies with these principles, which I haven't read the principles, but the tithe is a percentage of the income of the people, and while the word tithe means a tenth of that income, yet the returns are not limited to only a tenth of the income of the people. The fact is, the Bible sets forth three distinct tithes, and when taken over a period of years, amounts to about a fifth of a man's income or increase. Under the tithing system in Israel, there were no tax levies made against property, either real or personal, but taxes were a percentage of a man's earnings or increase. So, when a man ceased to earn and failed to have an increase, he paid no taxes. So again, I want you to hear this. It's pretty important. The fact is, the Bible sets forth three distinct tithes, and when taken over a period of years, amounts to about a fifth of a man's income or increase. Now, I'll just tell you, I haven't done the math, so I can't say with positive, you know, conviction that it is a fifth. But let me read out of another book for you, because it's interesting what these people have to say. Now, in this Institutes of Biblical Law, Rush Dooney is quoting, he's quoting from another book. And it says this, the tithe, and he's quoting from a book called All the Tithes by P.W. Thompson. So I'm actually going to read to you what Thompson says. The tithe, according to Thompson, amounted thus to a tenth for Yahweh, a tenth for the poor, and a slight amount from the second tithe for the Levites. Thompson called it 1/6 of a man's income, since the third or the poor tithe came twice in each six-year period. In terms of this, Thompson saw the total tithe as equal to one day's labor in six. This may be a little high. Now I'm reading from Rush Dooney. He's not quoting from Thompson anymore. So now this is Rush Dooney speaking. He says, this may be a little high, but it's close. Without reckoning the second tithe as a cost, that is the Levite's portion, it comes to 13.33% annually, whereas Thompson's reckoning takes it to a higher percentage. Now, Rand took it higher. Rand said a fifth. That'd be 1 day out of five. Thompson's saying 1 out of 6. Rush Dooney says that's a little high. So you do the math. But the bottom line is, I know it's not just a flat, simple 10%. We can figure that out by what we've already read in the scriptures. So the 10%, though, if we would be diligent about the 10%, since we're living in the society we're living in, we will have accomplished something. Let me just, since I'm out of time, I've already run over time, as a matter of fact, but I wanted to get those read. I wanted to make sure that I read those. Something that's not in the law, and if you can write this passage down, 2 Kings 23, verses 35 to 37, where the king got in a lot of trouble for taxing the property. It's not the king's property, and he can't tax it. In Yahweh's kingdom law, there will be no property tax. We're not allowed to do that because it doesn't belong to us. So there will be none of that. What I was going to refer to, Ruth, remember the story of Ruth and Boaz? Boaz knew her. He knew who she was. He knew her situation. In Yahweh's system of welfare, provided partly through this particular tithe and the other things like the not gleaning to the corners of the fields and so forth, there was no some huge government taking a portion out of your paycheck every week and handing it to a bunch of people you don't know and you never see, and you don't know what they're doing or why they're not working. You don't know what they do. There's a very specific accountability because the people know these people who are coming into their fields. In other words, you pay attention to who's coming into your field to get some of that in the corners.
That's what I was thinking back then. You know, they know, well, just leave some there, and so-and-so, they're going to be coming and getting it, you know.
You know.
They know that.
Exactly. And if old Deadbeat over here, the guy who just lays around drinking wine that he makes from gleaning the grapes in so-and-so's vineyard over here, and is too sorry to work, and he comes over here and gleans from my wheat, you know. Well, no. See, there's responsibility. There's accountability. And Ruth and Boaz is just, that's why I was going to go there and read about that. But that's just an example of it. He knew who she was. He knew the story. So there is accountability. And in Yahweh's welfare system, it's about getting people back on their feet, getting them off, and being stable and productive members of society. And it's about healing. It's not perpetual taking and supporting of deadbeats. It's not socialism at all. It's not even, I've heard people compare it to that. It's not that at all. It's not the same. And so next time, I've run over time, but I did get to the end of this. Hopefully it'll all get on there all right. And we're going to go to the work of the Levites, because we talked earlier in this series about Romans 13, what Romans 13 is talking about. What Romans 13 is talking about, for this cause you pay tribute, is exactly what the Levites do. They see that justice is rendered, and they look after the welfare of society according to Yahweh's laws, according to His statutes and judgments, according to His tithes and His economic system. And the Levites are the government servants or administrators in His kingdom government. And that, for that, we gladly would pay tribute.
a whole lot better run.
Absolutely. For that, I would gladly give tribute or tithe. Mm-hmm. And it would amount to a whole lot less than what we pay right now for unrighteous, antichrist government. So, questions and comments?